The Song of Achilles transforms Homer's ancient epic into an intimate love story that feels startlingly modern while honoring its classical roots. When Patroclus, a young exiled prince, meets the golden, perfect Achilles, their unlikely connection defies the expectations of gods and men alike. Their relationship begins tentatively, two boys swimming in the sea, racing along beaches, sharing quiet conversations, before blossoming into something profound. What makes their bond so moving is how it transcends the competitive nature of Greek society. In a world obsessed with glory, they create something different, a relationship based on mutual appreciation rather than dominance. "How could I be ashamed to lose to such beauty?" Patroclus reflects. It was enough to watch him win, to see the flashing soles of his feet kicking up sand. Through lyrical prose and psychological depth, the story breathes new life into characters who have existed for millennia, making us feel their joys and sorrows as if they were our contemporaries. The supernatural elements create tension between divine destiny and human choice. Thetis, Achilles' sea nymph mother, emerges as a formidable antagonist to their relationship. Cold in her immortality, she sees Patroclus as an obstacle to her son's greatness. "He will be a god," she declares. "You will be dead soon enough." Her interference highlights the fragility of mortal happiness as she separates them, sending Achilles to train with Chiron and later disguising him as a woman on Syros to prevent him joining the Trojan War. Yet human connection proves more powerful than divine schemes. When Patroclus tracks Achilles to Syros, their reunion shows that mortal love can overcome a goddess's machinations. The central prophecy presents an impossible choice. If Achilles goes to Troy, he will never return. If he stays home, he will live a long, unremarkable life. This dilemma between brief glory and long obscurity becomes the story's emotional fulcrum. Is immortal fame worth more than mortal joy? The years with Chiron on Mount Pelion form a golden interlude for Patroclus and Achilles, a time of growth and deepening intimacy away from court life. Their education blends practical skills like medicine with philosophical discussions about justice and the gods. When Achilles questions why Heracles was punished for actions during divinely induced madness, Chiron simply states, "There is no law that gods must be fair," foreshadowing the arbitrary fate awaiting them both. Their relationship flourishes in this isolation, following natural rhythms, gathering herbs in the morning, swimming in the afternoon, studying constellations at night. This represents their purest happiness, untainted by prophecy or war. Patroclus learns healing that will serve him throughout the Trojan War, while Achilles develops the fighting abilities that will make him legendary. Yet Chiron's most valuable lessons concern character rather than skill, wisdom they'll need when facing the brutal realities ahead. Miller's portrayal of the Trojan War strips away the glamour of heroic combat to reveal its brutal reality. The campaign begins with horror when Agamemnon sacrifices his daughter Iphigenia to appease Artemis, establishing the moral bankruptcy of this supposedly honorable venture. The war unfolds not as a glorious adventure, but as a grinding, decade-long siege, punctuated by raids, disease, and conflicts. The original purpose, retrieving Helen, becomes almost irrelevant as the war develops its own momentum. As Achilles observes, "Even if Helen were returned, Agamemnon would likely attack anyway." The true motivations emerge: plunder, glory, and power. War transforms its participants. Achilles, initially reluctant to kill, grows comfortable with slaughter, returning blood-covered from his first raid and speaking dreamily of killing 12 men. Patroclus remains overwhelmed by the horror, offering an alternative masculinity through healing rather than killing. Women become prizes distributed to commanders, innocent victims of war. When Agamemnon takes Briseis to punish Achilles, it reveals how women become pawns in men's power struggles, their bodies the terrain on which male honor is contested. The quarrel between Achilles and Agamemnon forms the central conflict of the latter part of the story, with far-reaching consequences. Their dispute represents contrasting views of honor. Agamemnon embodies traditional authority, derived from position and enforced through fear, while Achilles believes honor should be earned through excellence rather than rank. Both men's flaws emerge clearly. Agamemnon acts petty and tyrannical in taking Brasizes, while Achilles' response, withdrawing from battle and arranging for Zeus to aid the Trojans, reveals his callousness, effectively sentencing his countrymen to death to satisfy his pride. Patroclus serves as the moral center, offering a perspective that prioritizes compassion over pride. His empathy for the suffering Greeks contrasts with Achilles' indifference. When he pleads, "For me, then, save them for me," he articulates the novel's ethical core. Responsibilities to others should sometimes outweigh personal grievances. Upon learning of Patroclus' death, Achilles undergoes a complete metamorphosis that frightens even his fellow Greeks. He becomes barely human, a force of pure vengeance, his divine beauty twisted into something terrible. His primal scream silences the entire camp. His confrontation with Hector is not a heroic duel, but a methodical execution. Afterward, he desecrates Hector's corpse, dragging it behind his chariot 3 times daily around Troy's walls, defying both human decency and divine will. This portrayal of grief strips away all pretense of heroic glory. Achilles rejects food, sleep, and hygiene, his golden hair matted with dirt and blood. The breaking point comes when King Priam enters the Greek camp alone to beg for his son's body. Priam's simple words cut through Achilles' rage. "I have endured what no one on earth has endured. I have kissed the hands of the man who killed my son." In Priam's grief, Achilles sees his own father Peleus, who will soon mourn him just as Priam mourns Hector. By returning Hector's body, he begins reclaiming his humanity, though he knows his death will follow. The novel's conclusion meditates on memory, legacy, and immortality. Patroclus's ghost, trapped because his name remains uncarved on their shared tomb, watches as the war ends and new generations arise. Achilles' son, Pyrrhus, serves as a dark reflection of his father, possessing only savage warfare without humanity, slaughtering King Priam and sacrificing innocent Polysena. Through him, we see martial glory divorced from compassion becomes mere brutality. The emotional core centers on Theseus' transformation. After years of watching their tomb, the sea goddess approaches with changed eyes and carves Patroclus beside Achilles, acknowledging that true greatness can exist in mortal love. This moment reframes our understanding of immortality. While songs praise Achilles' martial prowess, it is his capacity to love that marks his true legacy. Their story endures not through divine intervention or heroic feats, but through the timeless power of human connection, a reminder that in a world of capricious gods and inevitable death, how we love makes us truly immortal.